This is Richard Verone. I'm conducting an oral history interview with General John Eric. We are in Lubbock, Texas, at Texas Tech University, the Special Collections Library interview room. Today is January 22nd, 2003. It's about 11:20 a.m. Sir, let's start with some basic biographical information. Can you tell me where and when you were born, and a little bit about your childhood?
Sure. If you'll stop calling me sir. I was born in Washington, D.C. in 1940.
Okay.
I was raised in the Bethesda suburbs by a father who was an attorney for the Internal Revenue Service for 40 years and a mother who was a librarian at the Library of Congress for 20 years. I went to high school with my now wife of 40 years at Bethesda Chevy Chase High School. When I finished that, I went into the Naval Academy.
Okay. Now, did you grow up in Washington?
I grew up in Bethesda, suburb of Washington, D.C.
Okay. What are your memories of Bethesda?
Nothing like what it is today.
Really?
Bethesda was a one-horse town with a main street and a hot shop and a bank and a funeral parlor and a high school when I grew up. Now it is the town of 1,000 restaurants, high rises, and two-lane highways. The footprint is still there, but I can't afford to go back and buy a house there. It is unbelievable.
Wow, so it's really changed.
But my high school days were just like the ones that are depicted in the 50s movies.
Really?
Crazy dancing. Elvis came on the scene when I was 13 or 14 and hit his heyday during our high school years. I dated my now wife, as I said. She lived right behind the high school, so it was very convenient for me to go and help her do her homework. It was just a regular nuclear family that Ned and Mary Catherine Eric raised. I have a brother and a sister, younger.
Both are younger?
Both are younger,
okay.
That's correct. Played football in high school, wasn't very good at it, but we had a championship team.
What position did you play?
I was an end and a linebacker.
Okay. In the days when everybody went both ways.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. We played single wing at Bethesda Chase High School.
Wow.
Yeah. It was an interesting experience.
Well, great. Tell me about your youth before high school. Do you have any memories of what sticks out about that time period of your life?
Well, that's interesting. Nothing. I had a lot of support in school. I can remember a third grade teacher that told me she wanted to visit me in the White House when I became president. I can remember being encouraged by my family and my teachers everywhere I turned. And for that reason, I think I have become a reasonably good teacher in my old age here. Working on somebody's self-esteem, I think, gets you 95% of the way to making them into a successful individual. Maybe it's 95%, but a whole bunch of the way.
So that teacher sticks out in your mind.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Was education emphasized in your household?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
My father was an attorney and my mother was a librarian. So
right.
Yes, it was.
I have to ask this as a history person who loves libraries. Did you go to visit your mom at the library often?
I did on occasion, not a lot. I probably went and visited her a couple times. Actually, she was kind of famous for the fact that she was the one that cataloged the Gutenberg Bible when the library got the Gutenberg Bible.
Okay.
And
okay.
You know, the Gutenberg Bible. Uh-huh.
Of course. So what kind of jobs did you have in your youth?
I delivered newspapers for the Washington Post. I started in fifth grade, and I delivered my last newspaper on the morning that I left and went to the Naval Academy in the summer of 1958. So that was the only job I had prior to going to the Naval
Academy. Did you do this on your bicycle?
I did it on my bicycle. I pulled a wagon on Sundays because the papers were heavier. Actually, my brother and I delivered one route. I can still remember 1950 when the front page of the paper advertised the fact that Charles Schulz was starting Charlie Brown, or Peanuts, was starting up back in 1950. It showed up in the paper. That was there's a lot of hype on that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I was 10 years old.
Did you get a chance to read the paper and look at it while you were delivering or before?
No, not while I was delivering. And you know what? I read the comics. I read the sports mm-hmm. when I learned how to read comfortably, mm-hmm. which was relatively early. But I wasn't a world events buff. Okay. I hate to say that in front of a historian, but at least at that stage of the game.
Right. Right. How about your parents? Were they newsworthy? Were they following world news and national news?
They were. Having been brought up in the military after I left home, mm-hmm. I'm a conservative. My parents, I will never forget, were dyed-in-the-wool liberal Democrats who loved Hubert Humphrey.
Okay. Okay.
And at that point in time, it didn't make any, when I was living with him, it really didn't make any difference. Actually, it didn't make any difference any time. We never discussed politics,
right.
other than the fact when my mother would applaud Hubert Humphrey, I would not.
Okay. Did you consider yourself, or looking back, do you consider yourself a good student?
Yes, okay. I do. I was an AB student.
Okay.
I wasn't an exceptional student, but I was an AB. And I had to work hard at that. It does not come naturally to me. None of my graduate work has come naturally to me. I'm not a good reader, but okay. I think I learned the value of education early on and went for work.
And that continued through high school, your AB work.
Mm-hmm.
What were your favorite subjects in high school?
Oh, cheerleaders, football.
What years were you in high school?
I was in high school from, I went into 10th grade in 55 and I graduated in 58.
Wow.
So that was the good, happy days, I guess.
Yes.
My favorite classes were probably math, which is what I have my teaching mm-hmm. Certificate in, secondary math. Mainly because it was more black and white than anything else. Mm-hmm. History I was afraid of because I had to memorize stuff. And, well, that's how it was taught anyway. I'm going to blame it on my teachers for that. and I wasn't a real good reader. Mm-hmm. But math, I could go in, get a formula, figure it out. And I also had some very good math teachers, too. And I had good history teachers and good English teachers also. Very good teachers all the way through school.
Did your parents emphasize going to college, or was that kind of expected?
It was a foregone conclusion.
Okay.
It was just, which one are you going to go to, and then how are we going to be able to afford it?
Okay. Which colleges did you have your sights on?
Well, I got an NROTC scholarship, and I applied to Princeton, and I applied to Rice. I got accepted at Rice, not at Princeton. Also, of course, I applied to my congressman for the appointment to Annapolis,
mm-hmm.
and I got a second alternate appointment from one of our senators, Senator Butler.
Mm-hmm.
The first alternate had a principal appointment from another congressional member, mm-hmm. and the principal didn't pass all the entrance exams, so I got moved up in the queue.
Hmm.
And
that's how you got
the rest is history, yes.
Now, why did you choose to apply for an ROTC scholarship and then look at the Naval Academy? Where was the military influence?
It was nowhere, absolutely nowhere. I had to do I had a military obligation. Everybody had to put some time in the military back then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Okay.
And I still don't, for that matter. I'm still wallowing around. And the military would get me a good quality post-secondary education that we could afford. Mm-hmm. Basically, my family could not afford to pay for my post-secondary education, so I had to either get scholarships, and I got a couple, or I had to take the NROTC scholarship or the Naval Academy, so that's why I applied to both of them.
Why the Navy?
I like the uniforms better.
Really?
Annapolis was closer to home.
Mm-hmm.
I actually applied to the Coast Guard Academy also and was accepted there. When I made my visit to the Coast Guard Academy, they were not nearly so hospitable as the folks at Annapolis when I made mm-hmm. my visit to Annapolis. Mm-hmm. So I chose Annapolis.
Right. Do you remember how your parents felt about that? Were they supportive of Annapolis or,
well,
or something else?
It was kind of interesting. I was upstairs in my bedroom, and my father came in the front door on a Saturday and said something to the effect that, hey, I think you're going to enjoy this letter. Now, I didn't see my father or my mother right after we found out that I was had been moved up in the mm-hmm. queue. But I can picture them now doing backflips, and they weren't athletic people. But but they had to have been happy for it for any number of reasons. Number one, Annapolis, I felt, was a relatively prestigious place to go to school. Mm-hmm. The price was right.
Okay.
And, well, I said prestigious. You could get a good education there. I can talk a little bit about Annapolis if you like.
I'd love to.
Very quickly.
Sure.
It's changed a lot since I was there, which is a good thing. When I went there, it bred immaturity, in my estimate. You had everything done for you, more so as a first year mm-hmm. student than the last year, but mm-hmm. all years you got up at the same time, you had your laundry done for you, you had your shoes done for you, you were told when you could go here, when you could go there, and most important, the curriculum was set for everybody. It was a trade school with academics thrown in. About midway through my stay there, Admiral Rickover came on the scene and started making changes. We got some electives my last two, I could have taken electives my last 2 years of school there. Mm-hmm. I started out with one and decided it was too much trouble adding a course, so I stayed with the regular curriculum.
Which was that? What?
Well, math.
Okay.
It would have been matrix algebra was the course. I can't imagine why I remember that, but I started and I dropped it, which was not a good thing to do at Annapolis. You don't start something and stop it. But at any rate, after I left, the curriculum became more and more varied, and now I believe you can even do pre-med at Annapolis and probably the other academies too, which I think is wonderful. If a kid came into Annapolis who was not particularly mature, he could get into some serious trouble. And I saw folks, okay, here's one of those things. When I went out, as a third classman, we had one weekend, I believe, a semester that we could leave the campus and go away on.
Okay.
I stayed drunk the whole time. Now, not literally, but I drank far more than I should have and partied far more than I probably should have. But that's why I say Annapolis bred immaturity. I didn't continue that. Certainly my body can't handle anything like that, but still scares me to think of some of the things that we did. But they were all legal at the time, but not very smart.
Okay.
So, and some of my classmates actually were killed in automobile accidents and in other situations, or damaged themselves, or did stupid, enduringly stupid things, which was kind of sad.
Can you give me some examples of some of the things you guys would do?
Oh, okay.
You don't have to.
Good grief. I will tell you right now that, and I will leave his name out.
Sure.
But somebody who cares can figure it out. The person who ended up as my best man and the godfather of our first child, at one of our parties first class year, we were drinking heavily, and one of my buddies went outside for a walk, and I decided to just kind of follow him. And so, keeping in mind that we were both somewhat inebriated, at any rate, he went down the street and around the corner. I went down the street and decided I'd cut through a bank parking lot and head him off and say boo to him. Well, cutting through the bank parking lot and trying to climb a wall at that time of night, which was actually wasn't too late, it was about 11 o'clock, was not a real smart thing to do, because the next thing I knew, I was in a policeman's spotlight saying, stop! Okay. And the next thing I knew, I was in his back seat. And my friend, was sitting there pleading with the policeman, nah, he's okay, there's nothing wrong, he wasn't going to do anything. And I'm sitting there telling my friend, let him take me to the police station, no sweat, I can take care of this. And finally, my wife-to-be and my friend and a number of others dragged me out of the car, and the cops said, stay clean. And this was 1961 or 62, so back when there was a lot more tolerance for stupidity. Unfortunately, there isn't, or maybe fortunately, there isn't as much tolerance for stupidity in the general populace today as there was back then.
Okay. What do you remember most about your Naval Academy days?
I remember the fact that everything was regimented. I had to march to class in small groups. I remember there was not much freedom when I was there. We had 3 weekends a semester when we were seniors, 2 weekends a semester away from the campus,
right.
2 weekends as juniors, 1 weekend as a sophomore, and none as a plebe. I remember the hazing during plebe year. There was severe hazing during my plebe year, and I was in one of the companies that was the toughest, 24th company. 10th and 24th were the ones that hammered their plebes the most, and fortunately, I ended up, or unfortunately, I ended up in the 24th company.
Is that by pure happenstance?
By happenstance, yes.
Can you give me any examples of what you had to go through?
Sure. Let's think. One of the most grueling hazing experiences probably wasn't life-threatening, as some of them were, but I had to crawl on my stomach the entire length of Bancroft Hall. And that's tiring if you've never done it. I don't recommend it, but I had to do that. I had to get up at 4 in the morning, do some stuff, then go do extra duty or march or whatever we did. The days were, 20 hours long as a plebe. There was something, it wasn't Russian roulette, it was some other name. Anyway, you stuck your hand in a bowl of water, and then you flipped your light switch over the sink a bunch of times, took the light bulb out, flicked it, and then here and here, and you know, if you're lucky, it came up off.
Right.
I don't know. That's enough of that. But that's one of the that could have been life threatening, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the more painful experiences and scary ones.
So yours came up on.
Most of the time, and when it came up off, is you know, figured out a way to fake it or something, which wasn't very good. We had to walk in the middle of the passageways, square all our corners, run up and down stairs, sit on the edges of our sit on the edges of our chairs at the meal time, and a lot of things that don't go on nowadays. Now, there is a lot of discipline. There's good discipline down there, and I think it's a much better place for a maturing adolescent to mature some more. When I was there, I didn't agree with a lot of the structure that was there.
Did you fight against that, or did you kind of try to fit into that?
I fit in. I didn't know any other way to do it at that point in time, and that's definitely a good thing, because fighting it would not have made it any better. Right. And I did see classmates try to fight it, and particularly the ones that had been in the service before they came to Annapolis, who had been through, say, Marine boot camp, and then came to Annapolis. They were the more they fought, the harder it was on them. I didn't knuckle under, and after I became an upperclassman, me and my roommates just had fun with the plebes. And you can have a lot of fun with them, joke with them, and not hurt them, and still train.
Right. What did your parents think about your Naval Academy experience?
Actually, I didn't talk to them a whole lot about it. I know they were very, very proud. I ended up on the brigade staff as a first classman. I was a three-striper and got a chance to march with at the front of the brigade at all the football games, which was not a bad thing to be able to do. No, my parents were proud, and they were happy I was getting a degree. My mother was not real happy when I made the decision to go into the Marine Corps. My father was kind of ambivalent. He gave the impression of being ambivalent anyway.
What about your brother and sister? How do they feel about their older brother being in the Navy or going to the Naval Academy?
I don't recall any kind of feelings from them at all mm-hmm. on that. We, in later years, have become much closer than we were actually when we were growing up.
Okay. And you made the comment that the Naval Academy kind of bred immaturity. Did you feel like once you had graduated after 4 years there that you have achieved some level of maturity that you did not have before you came in?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. If, and this is somewhat self-serving, if a kid, and a 17 or 18-year-old or 19-year-old, entered the Naval Academy with a good, firm, mature outlook on life, as much as somebody that age can have one of them, a sense of values mm-hmm. From whatever source, then they were fine. They'd go through there and they'd come out and they'd become admirals and generals, mm-hmm. Or just very, very good soldiers. But if there was somebody that went in there with a wild hair, so to speak, an attitude, attitude's okay, but somebody who was just looking to party or didn't take it seriously, they could, they would come out. They probably wouldn't finish Annapolis to begin mm-hmm. with, mm-hmm. but if they came out, they would struggle in the military environment.
Okay.
And some of my classmates did.
Okay.
It wasn't a free ride for me, obviously.
Right.
I struggled, but coped reasonably well.
Were you able to maintain your academic standing that you had up to that point?
ABs?
The ABs?
Yes. We had 970 graduated, and I was about 180 or 190, so,
okay.
You know, it's kind of...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you were there, if I'm correct, you're 1958 to 62?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. Tell me what you thought about President Kennedy when he was inaugurated at this time.
Oh, what did I think about President Kennedy? Well, here's
I'm sure,
how
I'm sure
shallow.
Your mother was thrilled.
Oh, yes, absolutely she was. We marched in his inaugural parade.
Did you?
And my mother served me and some of my closest friends beef stroganoff that night because it was snowing.
Okay.
It was cold.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in the outskirts. But what do I know about, what did I think about John Kennedy? Not a lot. No, I didn't think politics very much. I was pretty much intent on surviving my Naval Academy experience at that point in time. I was real interested in the debate. Was it Nixon and Kennedy mm-hmm. that debated?
Mm-hmm.
I heard that on the radio. I listened to it on the radio in my room, and to this day, my opinion of that debate was that Nixon had won the debate.
Mm-hmm.
You're the historian. Am I right?
Well, most people who listened on the radio thought Nixon had won. Most people saw it on television thought Kennedy had won, and it was the whole dawn of the new TV
yeah.
politics
yeah.
and Kennedy's good looks and his polished demeanor
right.
versus Nixon's kind of sweaty,
yeah.
herky-jerky,
right.
not so polished.
Yep.
So it's interesting. You confirmed that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I confirmed it. No, I'm just one of a million.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But no, but I was thrilled with him. I think he did everything right. I remember where I was when he was assassinated, and I was crushed, as was everybody. For any, you know, if you didn't like him, you're crushed when your president gets assassinated,
right.
or you better be. But I think he would have done great things. He did do great things. I think the Cuban Missile Crisis was a great achievement. Certainly, it had to have been. We prevailed.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was my perception of it. I was not involved in the Cuban Missile Crisis because I had just been commissioned and I was in the basic school.
Right.
It was January, October of 62. October 62, yes.
So, okay. You said you didn't follow politics too much. Were you aware of national issues and foreign policy and things like that?
No.
Okay.
No. That's another thing. I wasn't required to be. I didn't have time. Mm-hmm. We did get the Washington Post in front of our door every day. Mm-hmm. And as plebes, we had to read it and give reports. And as an upperclassman, I also read the Post. Mm-hmm. But not to the extent that I was involved or drew any hard conclusions, because I was more interested in being able to pass my history exam or my chemistry exam or whatever it was going to be, and getting the heck out of the Naval Academy in one piece. Mm-hmm. So, no, it was mostly me then.
Okay. What did you think of the military training that you had at the Academy?
Good to excellent. My training, my preparation to for the Marine Corps was totally absent.
Really?
It's much, much better now. As a matter of fact, it scares me now. I wonder why any midshipman decides to go into Marine Corps sticks with it, because they have to go through physical and mental and other mm-hmm. Marine Corps-oriented trials. Mm-hmm. There was a summer, our third class summer, our second class summer, half of that was spent at Little Creek in amphibious training mm-hmm. with the Marine Corps. I didn't do that. I stayed at Annapolis and trained the new plebes that came in for plebe summer. So I missed that.
Okay.
When I was there, my training for the Marine Corps was zero, nothing. I couldn't even blouse my trousers when I got to basic school. I had to depend on folks that had been in the Marine Corps to show me how to do that.
Wow.
So, but again, I'm a quick study, which is, that's one of the reasons I'm still alive today. I'm able to, I guess, rise to the occasion reasonably well. Mm-hmm. But as far as Annapolis was concerned, in my day, they didn't prepare future Marines particularly well at all. Today, totally different. Totally different.
Have you been back to the Academy?
Yes. Now I've helped some youngsters get into the Academy from various sources, mm-hmm. and vicariously, I have experienced some of the new and better mm-hmm. programs that they have down there in Memphis nowadays. Okay. I'm no expert on them, though.
Right, but you experienced what you did in 58-62, and you had a chance to look at it now.
Yes, yes.
You would consider it more improved?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Academically and professionally.
Okay. Did you feel like you got a good academic education there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It prepared me to go on to three additional graduate experiences, so mm-hmm. it was a good springboard.
Okay.
Annapolis, the reason I went to Annapolis, the reason I chose Annapolis, the reason I chose a military academy, was because price was right, probably not the first choice, but the education was good. But it was well-rounded. It mm-hmm. gave you a snapshot of any number of different areas mm-hmm. that might be a career area, mm-hmm. ultimately, once I got out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why, excuse me, that's why I was there.
And that worked, apparently.
It did.
Okay.
Yes. here I am.
Well, you're able to make some good choice. You had an array of choices for yourself, I guess.
I did.
Graduated.
It was, I had an array of choices. I chose the Marine Corps.
Tell me why.
Well, my wife, actually my girlfriend's sister, married a Marine.
Okay.
And he impressed the heck out of me.
Okay.
And I liked the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really enamored of going to sea and floating around on a boat in
right.
the North Atlantic. I
right.
did that as a plebe on my, or as a sophomore on my sophomore cruise.
Mm-hmm.
A mid-watch in the engine room of a destroyer in the North Atlantic is not my cup of tea. I like the idea of being out and about. I also spent one cruise at Annapolis on a submarine, an nuclear attack boat, and mm-hmm. it was one of the most wonderful experiences I ever had. But I didn't like being cooped up under
right.
the
right.
ocean for 10, 12 days at a time.
Right.
And the Marine Corps offered me any number of things that I could do that wouldn't require me to be at sea.
Mm-hmm. Did they actually come recruit you, or you just simply had to check a box?
Well, you had to be qualified. The way, and I'm going to struggle here and try to be able to describe to you exactly how it worked. There was a service selection night, and I think there still is. In my day, the class was cut into four parts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Academically, upper half and lower half. And then each of those were flight qualified and not flight qualified.
Okay.
So from each of those four quadrants, there were certain quotas for each of the, and at the time, four services, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can only go into the Marine Corps and the Navy out of Annapolis. 60 or 70 of my classmates went into the Air Force in 1962, and that was a travesty, according to everybody. And two or three years later, they cut out Air Force commissions. But at any rate, four quadrants,
mm-hmm.
Upper half flight qualified, upper half not flight qualified, lower half. And in each of those, there was a quota for each of the services. To get a cross-section, diversity, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I had decided my first choice was going to be Marine Corps, and lo and behold, when my quadrant, I was upper half flight qualified, when it was my turn, I said Marine Corps. And I did have two people come to my door that night and say, how about changing your mind and swapping with me? Which was kind of sad, because these guys were, both of them, were ones who had relatives, if not father, as a Marine,
yeah.
And they were not, they didn't make the cut,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that making the cut, the lower half, not flight qualified, took some
mm-hmm.
Marine
mm-hmm.
candidates and other service candidates also.
Okay, how did you get flight qualified?
Physical.
It was purely physical.
Yeah, and I guess there was some aptitude tests that we took also.
Mm-hmm.
Is this view upside down or right side up, things like that.
Right.
But just very rudimentary,
mm-hmm.
other than the eyes and
mm-hmm.
the rest of them qualify.
What did you do that summer after you graduated that spring?
Celebrated. what I did was go to Quantico. Our orders were to Quantico. I was in Easy Company in Quantico,
mm-hmm.
Which was, it was Easy Company. Anyway, it's a transient company. I had to call in every day. Had most of the summer off.
Okay.
I started the basic school, I guess, January 63.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. And that summer is kind of a blur. I did some administrative work at Quantico.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was then working at the State Department in Washington. We lived in an apartment in Washington.
So you got married? That summer or previous?
Got married 3 days after I graduated.
Okay.
My wife and I, it turns out, went to the same church in Chevy Chase, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
and we were married in that church. So,
okay.
Three days after I graduated, and
nice.
We're still married.
Right. So, had you ever been to Quantico before?
You know what? Oh, yes. On a trip from Annapolis, after I had chosen the Marine Corps and the bunch of us had been identified as midshipmen going into the Marine Corps. We took tours of various Marine Corps installations
okay.
and got briefed on the Marine Corps. But that was the first time.
I was just wondering what your impression was once you started January 63, when you got into basic school, what your opinion was of Quantico.
Oh, I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was wonderful. You could buy a six-pack of beer for 75 cents. I was smoking then. I could buy a pack of cigarettes for 25 cents. Notice I'm a materialistic guy, very shallow. But no, it was great. I was learning something. I had no clue how to be a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic school is where you were taught to be a Marine.
Right.
I didn't do particularly well in the basic school. I never completed the obstacle course in time. I'm still not sure why I was graduated, but I'm just as glad.
Mm-hmm. It was a 12-week course, is that correct?
No, it was 6 months.
Six months.
And I think it still is 6 months.
Okay.
Still is 6 months.
So tell me what they taught you.
Oh, they taught us how to small unit tactics, how to arrange a squad and assault a hill, small unit tactics. They taught us weaponry, everything from small arms, rifles, to artillery and tanks and things like that.
How did you handle the weapons training?
I thought that was great.
Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. We had live fire. I even got a chance to use the old flamethrower.
Really?
Which I remember this day. Didn't hurt myself either, or anyone else for that matter, which was probably a miracle. But they also taught us leadership and management. They taught us ethics. They taught us, even languages then. French was my language. I had taken 2 years of French in high school, 2 years at Annapolis, and I continued it in basic school.
Okay.
And actually got an MOS, military occupation specialty, in French. I was a translator, not an interpreter.
Okay.
Translator.
Okay.
The lower qualification. I could understand French, but I don't push me too far beyond that. That's what they taught us. Also physical training, lots of physical training.
How did you do with the physical training?
Well, fine, except I never finished the obstacle course. I was good. I mean, I could run as fast and as far and as jump as high as most people, but when it came to pulling myself up on a bar, my upper body strength sucked. Mm-hmm. And it still does, and it always has. Well, I did at one point in my career in the Marine Corps in the mid-70s, when the Marine Corps went to having to do chin-ups as part of the physical fitness test, I did get myself up to 17 or 18 chins, and I'm pretty proud of that.
That's excellent.
As you can tell, I'm taking your time now.
That's excellent.
Couldn't do a half a chin right now. Probably injure myself irreparably if I tried a chin right now. But no upper body strength, so I couldn't do all those things particularly well.
Mm-hmm. What kind of weapons did you train on? The M1 and
The M1 and the 45.
Okay.
Those were the personal weapons, and then of course the bazooka, 3.5 rocket launcher, flamethrowers. M60 machine gun, and then there was the BAR back then. I think we still had the BAR. That's all I can remember.
Okay. What did they teach you in the classroom? You said you took some language training. Mm-hmm. I guess they did history of the Corps and
absolutely.
You said ethics and things like that. What did they try to emphasize to you?
Well, here goes. The Marine Corps depends on the people. It's people. And the emphasis was always on what you are learning now you will use to take care of your people in one way or another. And that's just an absolutely wonderful lesson. I've got to say this on record. The Army's new slogan, an army of one, is embarrassing. And I'll just leave it at that. You don't do anything by yourself. You depend on the people around you, not just the people above you, but more important, the people below you to do your job or do the job that you need to get done. Mm-hmm. That was taught. I don't mean to lecture, but that's what I remember. Leadership, you know, be honest, you have integrity, all of those things. Absolutely, nothing against them, but in the end, take care of your people.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take care of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm alive today because of that. Yeah. And there are a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. You can tell stories like that, being a Marine family.
Tell me the difference between the Naval Academy discipline and what was going on with the Navy versus what you experienced at Quantico.
Well, I'll tell you that there wasn't much difference. No hazing at Quantico, obviously. We were officers then. We had much more freedom at Quantico. Mm-hmm. But The naval service at that stage of the game, I would say probably the discipline at Annapolis was, the disciplinary program at Annapolis was probably an offshoot of Marine discipline. Okay. For any number of reasons, not the least of which is you need to teach young men, and men then, mm-hmm. ultimately women, what the extent is of their tolerance for pain, I guess, mm-hmm. and pain at whatever level and whatever definition of pain. One of the reasons there's a lot of in-your-face stuff at boot camp. I had a young Marine one time when I had my squadron come up to me and ask me, and I think it was in my office. I'm not sure what he was there for, either counseling or but he said, "Why did my drill instructor scream and shout bad things about my mother at me at boot camp?" And I probably learned more in the next frantic 30 seconds of trying to come up with an answer to that I could give a kid that was really interested in an answer and deserved an answer. Mm-hmm. And as far as I knew, he may have already gotten one, but he was testing me. At that point, I didn't consider that. But why would somebody put you in that position and do that when they don't even know you? I mean, that's just terrible stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, my answer was, and it's one of the better answers I've given on the spur of the moment, was it's because you have to learn what the extent of your tolerance is for the unknown, for the unexpected. What would you be doing? How would you respond to sitting in a foxhole and watching your best friend's head get blown off? You know, that's a horrible thing to imagine. But equally as horrible and equally as stressful is somebody sitting there blaspheming your mother right in front of your face. I did tell him I'm not sure that would be my technique for teaching you how, mm-hmm. teaching you what your tolerance is for horrible things. But boot camp is there to teach the kids, you know, how to cope with absolutely unbelievable situations, among other things.
Right.
And that's why the drill instructor is being such a prick. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. How did he react to this?
He liked the answer. Most important, I liked the answer too. I was relieved. I like it today. I wouldn't be talking about it today. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I deserve to like it. I'm not sure it's the best answer, but I needed to have an answer to that question as much as a kid needed an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. Why am I in a Marine Corps where somebody would do something like that? Again, my technique, and if I were in charge of whatever unit it was that was doing the training, I would not allow my people to use that technique. However, I would allow them to use as much as they needed to get the kids taught what their tolerance is. Mm-hmm. Or get them familiar with what their personal tolerance for pain is. Again, pain, a euphemism for stress.
Right, right. Looking back at your career and what you just said, that answer, did that prove true in your personal career with the Marine Corps and your stress and combat?
Actually, I never went to boot camp. I went through an officer training.
Okay, so as far as your, the...
Yeah. As bad as it was and as immature as it was, the hazing experiences I went through mm-hmm. as a plebe at Annapolis did teach me something, did teach me my tolerance. I had a benefit, I had a wonderful benefit when I went to Annapolis. I had not a clue what it was going to be like. I didn't know hardly anything about Annapolis. I knew the people, the plebes had to walk around in the middle of the hallway and they had to run up and down the stairs and they had to sit on the edges of their chairs, but I had no idea that the hazing was going to be as extreme as it was. So I just went in there and said, I guess this is the way it's got to be, so I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't fight it other than to, you know, cope, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I'd gone through boot camp and then gone to Annapolis and had some first class prick, mm-hmm. telling me to do these ridiculous things, I'm not sure how I would cope with that.
So it worked out timing-wise for you, where you could deal with that stuff early on, and then once you got to the basic school, you were seasoned, and you were basically taught how to be a Marine.
Yes. I was seasoned to the extent that I knew what the military was, I knew what my tolerances were,
uh-huh.
I knew what I didn't know, and that's a very important thing, as you well know. It's almost more important to know what you don't know
mm-hmm.
than it is to know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
By yogiism.
Mm-hmm. What kind of Marine did you turn out to be there after your basic school?
As a result of basic, I was an average Marine.
Okay.
I got average grades on my fitness reports. I considered myself an excellent, superb professional Marine who could do the job that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But in the group of Marines that graduated, I was probably somewhere middle,
okay.
Edging maybe toward the top, but nothing spectacular.
Okay. And so your wife, did you guys have on-base housing?
We ultimately did.
Okay.
She went and got pregnant. so once that happened, then she had to quit her job up in the State Department,
mm-hmm.
and we went into housing in Thomason Park in
okay.
At Quantico. I think it was a two-bedroom townhouse.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever lived in Quantico?
I'm familiar with that area.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
From North Carolina, so
oh,
I traveled
okay,
up
sure.
in that area quite a bit.
Yeah.
So what did you do after your basic school? What was your assignment?
My assignment was for the first 6 weeks to have a baby, because I couldn't be transferred right away. So I went, instead of going to the Fort Sill Army Artillery Course, I was assigned the MOS for artillery, 0802.
Okay.
0801 initially, until I got my qualification, 0802. At the time, Quantico had a artillery demonstration battery and an artillery, basic artillery officer's course.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fortunate enough to stay there at Quantico while my wife couldn't travel, while she finished having our firstborn, and I finished the artillery school there. Did a lot better in the artillery school than I did in basic school. I don't know, I may even have been number one or two in the class, small class, but
mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was a platoon commander in the artillery demonstration battery there at Quantico.
Okay.
And we stayed there until our daughter was born in April, and we probably left the early May for my first duty assignment in Hawaii.
Hawaii?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We drove across country in a 61 Ford Falcon, stick shift, no radio, no air.
Wow.
Yeah. But those were good old days.
With an infant in the car.
With an infant in,
wow.
the, in the car. 6 weeks old. Wait a minute. She was born in April. No, I think she was younger than 6 weeks. But at any rate, that's not material. An infant. You're
mm-hmm.
absolutely right. We
mm-hmm.
we drove cross country, Route 66,
mm-hmm.
ended up spending the night in Amarillo.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that vividly. There was a sandstorm that night. We drove to San Francisco, dropped the car off to be floated across to Hawaii. Then we went to Travis, flew across. Or no, that's not right. We took a boat. We went on an MSDS ship. Terry and I and Debbie. About 5 days float across
mm-hmm.
the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And what was your duty there in Hawaii?
I joined C Battery 312,
mm-hmm.
Which was a 105 battery. I started out as a forward observer with Charlie Company 14. Spent about 6 months doing that. Moved back to the battery and took over as a platoon commander, firing platoon commander, 3 guns.
Mm-hmm.
And that was rest of my stay there in Hawaii. I was the firing platoon commander. I put in for flight training after about 8 months there, was accepted. So we actually left Hawaii 14 or 15 months after we had gotten there.
Okay, so 1964.
Yes, right. Summer of 64.
You were in Hawaii then when Kennedy was killed.
Yes, I had just finished a nuclear weapons course.
Hmm.
And was in the car listening to the radio on my way home.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about, you said you took a nuclear weapons course. What other kind of training did they give you there in Hawaii? And I'm interested because it's preparing you for
sure
your experiences in the future.
Well, one of the things that I volunteered for, and one of the schools I volunteered for and took, was guerrilla warfare school.
Hmm.
And we were hearing all kinds of things about Vietnam, people going over there for 30 days on the job training programs, and I wished I could have gone over there for 30 days on the job training. The next best thing was to go through a 3-week guerrilla warfare course. We rappelled, we did the slide for life, we did jungle warfare, and there's some pretty good jungles in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there probably aren't as many today as there were back in 63, mm-hmm. 64. But the nuclear weapons, I can't remember, and probably a legal course, because at that point in time, junior officers were being designated as defense counsel and trial counsel for court-martial cases.
Mm-hmm.
That stopped probably late 60s, early 70s, when the Marine Corps got smart and said, we're not gonna, we need real lawyers.
Right.
And they got them then. While I was in Hawaii, we deployed to Taiwan on an exercise. Thought it was great, loved the Far East, thought it was exciting, still wanted to get to Vietnam. So I decided the best way for me to get to Vietnam, the fastest way for me to get to Vietnam, was to go back, become a helicopter pilot, and then go to Vietnam.
Can I interrupt you? Why did you want to go to Vietnam?
Because that was the thing to do. There was a war going on, or there was a war brewing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Marine Corps. And I was tired of listening to people telling war stories. I wanted to have my own war stories.
Okay.
I wanted to stop the spread of communism, too.
Okay.
I guess. So there were any number of reasons, but most of them, I'm in the Marine Corps. If I'm wearing the Marine Corps uniform, I ought to. And if there's combat somewhere, I ought to go there.
Okay.
So I made the giant step, or took the giant step, and applied for flight training, and was accepted. And so in the summer of 64, the Eric family left Hawaii to go back to Pensacola. Not 6 months later, while I was in the middle of my flight training at Pensacola, my unit shipped out to Vietnam. So I could have stayed right where I was and gotten there. But I am ever so grateful for the opportunity to spend my two tours in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot, more particularly as an attack helicopter
pilot,
rather than an artillery officer.
Right. Let me ask you about, before we get into your helicopter training, how much were you aware, you've talked about, you knew there was a war brewing in Vietnam, how much were you keeping up more and more with world politics, world diplomacy, what was happening, on that kind of thing?
I hate to admit this, about the third time I've said this, maybe this is something I don't want to have public, but not sorry. It was just me. I was interested in the fact that there was guerrilla warfare going on in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in learning about how to fight guerrilla warfare, how to conduct guerrilla warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in, you know, the extent to which the U.S. was becoming more and more committed,
right,
or would become more and more committed. But the underlying politics didn't. I wasn't involved in that at all, and that went the entire Vietnam War. Even when I was in Monterey, California, going to postgraduate school between my two tours, I was not swept up into any politics at all.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I was still surrounded by military at Monterey, the day of postgraduate school.
Right.
But you know, that black hole, 1968, I was just struggling to get my master's thesis done and take these highfalutin statistical courses that were going to get me my operations research degree, and studying 12, 15 hours a day. You've never had to do that, I know.
So, why
that was a joke. That was a joke.
Yeah, trying not to talk about myself, or to me talk about you. I have to ask, why not? Why? I mean, you're an intelligent person, and you went to an excellent undergraduate academy, and.
Well, you remember, I told you I didn't read the paper a lot or follow politics a lot in Annapolis.
Right.
My rationale for that then and today is, I was too busy trying to survive, and the same applied to Monterey. And my wife, if she were sitting here, she would be jumping up and down saying, yeah, that's exactly right. Because if we ever came close to splitting up, it was when she was caring for our two children. I was between Vietnam tours. She knew where I had been. She knew I was going back. And I was just absolutely, I'm not smart. I don't read well. I had to concentrate, spend every minute of my time on the academics. And the courses I were taking were theoretical, very, very little application, which was horrible. So no slack, no slack at all. Okay. And that's the reason I
came.
I would characterize it as probably irresponsible at that stage of the game, not becoming more up to speed on the politics of the situation. But politics or not, I was a Marine,
right,
and I was going to go back over there,
right,
and so I'm going to go back over there and I'm going to win my battles.
Why did you choose helicopter pilot training?
Because I thought it would get me to Vietnam faster. I also liked the idea that I could see where I was going more than if I was up and high in a jet. I could have taken jets. I qualified for them, but I wasn't interested in it. I was interested in helicopters.
Was that a new interest for you, or?
Your questions are magnificent. Yeah, it was. When I was at Annapolis, there was a lot of talk about aviation. Go aviation, go aviation. Get $100 extra a month, plus it's fun. There's more fun at the bar and all those other things. But I was scared of heights. I'm still scared to death of heights.
Really?
I really am. But when I went to guerrilla warfare school in Hawaii, I was a platoon commander for a couple of days. So that meant I was first one to do the rappelling. I was first one to do the slide for life. All high stuff, you start high and you end up low, as you know. And I learned that, okay, I may be afraid of heights, but I can cope with them. So maybe I should consider aviation at this stage of the game. Plus, I'm artillery. That's not cool. And the 1st Marine Brigade had an aviation element and a ground element. And the officers club was shared by the two, and the aviators were always having more fun than the artillery. So I figured there must be something to that.
Okay, we'll take a break, and this will end our interview with General John Eric today. It's January 22nd. We'll pick up another time. Thank you, sir.